What did you do to Owen that night, by the way?
We did it a few times to him, actually. Hung a Kotex from his guitar.
Oh, dear.
And he and actually colored it. And it was like after, you know, we had taken a break. So, you know, he comes back. He doesn't really look. He picks up his guitar, puts it around him. And
all right. Let's move on to...
Jay's got to talk a little.
No, I don't remember any of this.
Well, there's something.
You did less drugs than they did.
Actually, I remember some of it, but not in the detail that you do.
Who remembers driving from the Twin Cities to play a job in Wisconsin during a snowstorm? However, you didn't quite make it to Wisconsin.
Really? I think that's an Owen story.
Well, that's when they put the freeways in. Okay, I mean, they literally, okay. There was no, you know, they had just put in like 35W and the freeways were brand. I mean, we didn't have freeways, when, you know, and so it was a snowy night. And
yeah, no GPS.
Yeah, no GPS. Nothing. Yeah. And we're driving, and we've been driving for like about 45 minutes to get to Hudson or something. And all of a sudden, it's just blizzarding. And I'm telling the story about when they just put the freeways in, Owen. And it's just snowing and snowing and snowing. And all of a sudden, we pull off, and there are Sears on Lake Street. So I don't know what we were doing.
Going in circles.
It's kind of like we weren't, like, not smoking dope either. You know what I mean? So it's like, who knows? But
I just remember we're pulling in, and we see these lights. We go, that's the city in Wisconsin. That's it. And I said, oh, thank God we're here. It was a snowstorm, and we pull in, and it's Sears on Lake Street.
which, for everybody listening, is about 11 miles from their house.
And we had been gone traveling for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's like, the great and Lauren route. Says, I see it. I see the lights of the city. I see the lights.
And now we've got to get to one of the great stories of the High Spirits. And this is when Mr. Owen Husney goes from a worker at Chicken Delight to a local rock star all in one night.
Oh, my God, that's right. Let me remember that story.
This is someplace where it won't
be. Let me put this together. We had been on money to live on and be in the band. I started, when the band first started, I was delivering chicken for Chicken Delight, which meant that your life was miserable because you had to make this chicken, then you had to rush to get it delivered once you made it, but you were always constantly late, and then you got yelled at the house where you were delivering the chicken, but they had called back the main store to say this idiot's late. Then you got yelled at by the boss, then you had to refry the chicken and do it, and it was just, but I needed the money. So we had been playing live probably at the band shell at Lake Harriet or something like that. But we had also been on television with Date with Dino, but I still kind of needed to make money. And that night after we had been on the Top 10 show and on TV, I went to deliver chicken. And these two girls came to the door, and I delivered the chicken and took their money, and they said, "You look familiar. Hey, aren't you in that big band?" And I'm wearing a chicken hat with a chicken beak on it and a bow tie that I still have that says Chicken Delight and like a chicken shirt or something like that. And I said, "No, that's not me. No. Everybody thinks I look like that guy. That's not me with my chicken hat on. Excuse me, ma'am. I got to go." And I went back to the store, and the boss says, "Where were you? You were late." And I took that chicken beak hat and I threw it in his face. And I said, "I'm a rock star. I'm out of here. Screw you." And I walked out, and then that was it. And I was devoted to the band.
That's a great story. I love that. Levinson, you had a comment about Love Light and why you thought it was a hit record.
I don't know. We just, as I said, we just found a sweet spot for it. Nobody really arranged it. Everybody played their own part. We did it in our style, which was a sort of a white bread English version of the soulful version. And instead of horns, we had the organ. We always relied on the keyboards to make our sound. Cliff didn't really know all the words, Cliff back then, Lauren today. So he just sort of made up the words that rhymed, that were close to it. And we all went with it, and it just happened. There was no intent. There was no arrangement down on paper. There was no, this is when you do this. We just did it. And I remember in the studio that Jay had to cue Lauren when to come in for the vocal after the bridge because he didn't know. Because
I still had to the other day. That,
because we always did it a little different every time. Every time. And there just was a sweet spot, and and people liked it.
And you talked about the other day when we met about riding a wave of fun.
I think every kid, teenager in life deserves a summer of 65.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
unbelievable. We had a song that broke in May, rising up the charts in June, in the top 10 in July, playing 5 nights a week, money in our pocket, in a band when we're 17 and 18 years old. The fact, when I look back at it now, and I think my parents handed me the keys to their car to drive all over the upper Midwest 2 and 3 hours. I mean, would I do that for my daughter when she was 17? No, you know, not a prayer.
Yeah, I thought about that too.
You know, not a prayer. But it was a summer that every teenager in their wildest dreams deserves.
If there was a time machine, like I said before,
yeah,
with everything, and I've had a lot of fun in my life, I would go back to that summer of 65 in a minute.
We were driving British sports cars, had money in our pocket.
I remember
had a great time.
I actually made a comment to my dad. I said, I'm making more money than you are now. And he didn't talk to me for like 2 months. And I realized that I was making more money than him. And it was a really kind of a crappy thing to say. I didn't realize. I was just so happy. You know, and I had bought an MGB or MGB.
No, you bought that midget.
Oh, I bought a not a Bug Eye Sprite, but it was a...
The Aston Martin, or the other one. This is like a Bug Eye Sprite. Right.
And the other thing is...
Austin Healy.
That summer, every now and then there was pissing contests between one or the other of us, but they were all minor little shit. Never once, when I was in the band... had a major argument, had a major blowout, had somebody saying, you're taking my part, I want to play the lead, there never was any of that. We just all loved the band, we loved the sound, and we loved what Love Light did for us.
We knew we felt lucky to be here.
Today when we were rehearsing for this reunion, even still, between Jay and I would be the two most obvious soloists. You know, a lot of times I go, you take the solo. Yeah. And then you'll go,
You take the solo.
And, you know, between keyboard players and guitar players who love to take solos, usually there's a big fight. But it's not, you just do it, now, then I'll take that
Never.
Solo.
We're always into the totality of the song.
Of course, we do 2 solos on a lot of songs, too.
And then we do.
It keeps everybody happy.
So at that time period, when the High Spirits were playing live, were there other local bands that impressed you guys?
Oh,
lots of them.
We thought they were all better than us. We couldn't figure out how we were at or near the top of the heap when they were all, as musicians, musically better than us.
I was in awe of Tom Nystrom Greg Malland and Jim Johnson.
Yeah,
I was in awe of those, and I still am. I mean, I used to literally go and stand right up next to Greg was. You know, I would stand and watch him. And the same with, you know, Jim Johnson.
He filled in for me in one of the gigs.
Yeah.
When
who
I
did?
Greg.
Yeah, he did. I actually remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All your stories of carrying up the B3, that was his
B3. Oh, that's where I got that. Yeah.
I remember going out to the Marion Ballroom. It must have been 64, right? You know, before I was in High Spirits, but I went to hear the Accents every time they played. Yeah. And I remember when
he had a 3-octave range.
He did. And when I heard him sing Why, I thought I had died and gone to heaven.
Yeah, me too.
I still have that on my frequent playlist.
I played in a band with him after the High Spirits.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you?
He's just an awesome talent.
And Charlie Lindley.
I remember going out to Schlieff's Little City, and I remember Jim Johnson had just come back from the military. Bill Deal was, you know, in a shiny suit giving away 45s at, during the break. They had just learned Nowhere Man by the Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
It was so perfect. So, I mean, we really had great bands.
Yeah.
I loved hearing lots the Del talent. Counts when, you know. Yeah. They, you know
I remember going to the Marigold Ballroom where we were playing, but the Castaways had gone really super big, you know, like top five on Billboard. And I, you know, we knew all those guys. Yeah. And I remember yeah, I playing there. And they Danny. Stopped down. And they had been on, oh, God, what's that show? It was on West Coast.
It was a date with Dina
Hullabaloo?
McCurley.
No, but it was a big national television
national
show.
National show. I remember.
And they were, and I remember seeing those guys, and they were in California, and they were big, and they had California tan and beads. They were wearing beads, and I thought, God, I wish they would die. I'm so jealous. I was so jealous. I remember just thinking, oh, I want that to be me so badly.
Doug, how about you as far as local bands?
I'm pretty much this echo what everyone else has said here. There were Underbeats, Accents, and
Hot Half Dozen.
Yeah, all of these bands are just Horns phenomenal.
And Michael's Mystics.
Yep.
Because you know what? They were the real deal, too. What always impressed me is if you were the real deal, you know, and the way Kenny Sands played guitar against Nystrom singing, and he did that solo. This was not some, you know, little Beach Boys emulation types, you know. It wasn't that. This was real, real soulful, really deep stuff that these bands were doing.
Finish up what you were saying.
Well, all I'm saying is that there were literally hundreds of bands around here, hundreds of them, and that's not an exaggeration. In that, there was probably 20 or 30 bands that were really good, and then you had a top 10, 12, 15 bands that were awesome. All you have to really do is look at an old B Sharp poster.
Yep.
And you'll see on there the names of the very best bands. And then, of course, the guys from Mankato that...
Gestures.
Dale Minton was probably
the best artist.
Didn't you play with them?
In terms of creativity, he probably was the best talent in the whole
so
area.
So if you take a composite of all these bands we've just shared discussing here, the talent pool was enormous, absolutely enormous.
Jay, did you get your 2 cents in there?
Well, my favorite band, I guess, was probably Gregory D and the Ivanis, the Underbeats, the Accents, you know, all the same groups that everybody's been talking about.
Okay. Well, where did you pick up some of your things that you do? Because I know, you know, who did you like to emulate?
I mean, I like to play the grind.
Yeah, I know. I like when you play the grind, yeah.
Okay. Was
yeah.
that an original song?
Yes.
Greg Miller
wrote that. Gregory D wrote that, I believe the story is when he hauled his B3 up north on a very cold winter day or night, his Leslie was frozen.
caused it
to stutter.
Really slow.
And he used that to
do the grind.
To write the grind.
Because Leslie's nothing more than a speaker with a belt drive on it, and so it was analog.
Yeah. Fast and slow. And fast.
So Lauren used to say to me, in 1967, what do you think we're going to be doing 10 years after the band breaks up?
Yikes.
And I don't know. God, we're probably dead. I don't know. Who knows? And here we are, 50 years, 50 frickin' years later. And we're all sitting here in one room. And that's an accomplishment. And here's the other thing, too, because we had John Bream came by 2 days ago. And, you know, he's kind of an in and out guy. I've known him for, you know, he sat for 3 hours and listened to us. And you know what? Not that the High Spirits, who knows what we're going to be tonight. The very fact that we're together and we're playing. But he saw what we, 50 years can go by. We can go back into a room and there's a cohesive sound. There's a sound. And you're either born with that, and it all comes together. The greatest example in the world is the Beatles, because they, you know, they represented all different parts that when they came together, you know.
You're talking about chemistry.
Chemistry beyond.
Groove.
You know.
Yeah. It's amazing. And It's amazing.
It's unexplainable.
Yeah.
And even if we suck tonight, which we won't.
All I'm concerned about is that they have a good sound system. We're not going to suck.
Well, they're going to have a bad sound system. Yeah. So I'm just concerned about
the support system we have.
You always count.
Always blame the sound guy. Suck. Right, Denny?
Blame the sound guy.
And, of course, we have to mention that what you're talking about is the 50th anniversary of the Class of 65 St. Louis Park High School reunion tonight. And the High Spirits will be performing a showcase set. How do you guys feel about that?
50 years ago, we played at their graduation party. And we didn't really get into this, but after we recorded Love Light, I was going to the university in the morning. I was working for my Uncle Max at his warehouse in the afternoon. I was practicing with the High Spirits at night. On Saturdays, I went to the Star and Tribune and worked. And then on Sunday with the High Spurs would practice. So shortly after we recorded Love Light, and unbeknownst to me and the guys, that night we recorded Love Light, I already had mononucleosis. And that's why I could hardly sing the flip side. I mean, I did everything I could to sing Love Light. So I went in the hospital, and the doctor told me, I went home, I had this headache, I was at McDonald's, a guy drove me home, friend of mine, and I said to my mom, God, I just feel terrible. So they took me to the doctor. Anyway, long story short, I'm at Methodist Hospital, and the doctor told me that I'd probably be in the hospital for 2-3 weeks. And I started crying. I mean, I just went, I can't believe this. We just recorded this record, and these guys, I got this band. Shit, I'm going to be out of the band, and I'm just thinking all these things. Well, I was out of the hospital in 10 days. And then we had, our first gig was this all-night party thing. I told the doctor, I got to play it. So Owen came and picked me. He said, Owen picked me up. We went to the high school, played, and then Owen took me home. So 50 years later, we're playing at their 50th reunion.
So here's your records, both of them, from 65 and 66.
Nice shape.
Whatever you guys did back then, it's all captured here in these grooves. Do you think there's a spiritual element to music at all? Do you know what I'm saying, Rick?
I do understand what you're saying. I think there's a spiritual aspect to it. You know, your inner voice comes out of you, your emotions that come out of you, your intellect, which is your training, you know, that you learn how to play a keyboard or a guitar or percussion or whatever you're doing. And it all is blended in nonverbal, well, at least when you're singing, of course, but I mean, it all comes together in an expression of sound.
Doug said to me, was it yesterday or the day before? He says, how do you compare this with your career? And I had a career that I'm so profoundly thankful for. As a surgeon, I did over 30,000 operations.
Really?
I said, saw over 250,000 patients, 41 years. I said, you know, I did that for my mind, and I did that for my heart.
The music.
But the music is for my soul.
And I told him, never tell your wife that.
And it's true.
Yeah, it is.
The music is in your soul or it's not.
And this, the music's right. In your soul. And this band is analogous. I like to use a football play as an analogy to a lot of things in life with a team. You know, you have 11 guys out there. And if one guy screws up out of the 11, the whole play falls apart.
Right.
And that's what this band's like. I mean, we all have our talents, and maybe there's a lead player, and there's a great keyboard player, and there's a singer and rhythm, but all of us together make it. One of us is not there, it's not the same.
It's so odd that the disparate parts come together.
Yeah.
But that's the magic with any band that comes together and plays cohesively. It's that undefinable magic,
right,
that why do other people get together and they're better players than we are, but it doesn't work out? Why do some people have, you know, hits and other people are incredible, but they don't? There's a magic about stuff that comes together, and I've seen that all my life, you know, being in the business and managed 1,000 bands. And for some reason, some bands just really, really do well. My only regret, because I would go back in a time machine, is that we didn't know more about the business so that we could have pushed our record label like crazy and threatened them and done all the kinds of stuff that people did. and that we didn't write more. And that we didn't, because we had the capability. In fact, Lauren and I even wrote songs after the band broke up. And David Z and I, David Rifkin and I, wrote songs after the band broke up that were really cool. We didn't think to do that then, except for Rick doing it.
And that's only because she broke my heart.
Well, and we also have to remember, you mostly got hired to play dances in those days. Yeah. That's primarily the driver.
We weren't a concert band. We weren't a show band. We were a dance band.
But there were really none of that in those days. The kids today, they don't get that. You know, they don't. I mean, you would go to a dance hall, there'd be no drinking. And you'd have 800 kids, 500 kids, 300 kids spending all night there. And there was no booze.
Sweat pouring off their body.
There's no booze. Fun. You know, nowadays, these kids, they don't get that. They don't have that.
Rick Levinson asked me the other day, do you like drumming? Do you still like doing that? Is that, you really enjoy doing that part of it? And the thing that, what I liked about it most was when you're the drummer and you had 1,000 or 1,500 kids out there, you're the one that made every move happen.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was real power, and it felt awesome.
And your drums were not mic'd, were they?
No, it was an athletic event. In fact, I chained them down sometimes, and I used spikes on all the stands so I wouldn't kick them over. And I used to break parts constantly. You guys know what I'm talking about. It was an athletic event. Yeah. I had forearms like Popeye.
I know you guys have a gig to get to tonight.
9:00, Sheraton West near Redstone. Be there or be square, 6-pack of RC Cola.
Owen, Lauren, Rick Levinson, Doug, Jay, and Rick Beresford, thank you for stopping by Sunrise Sound today and sharing with us the story of the High Spirits.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for inviting us. Bye-bye.
And Denny. Yeah.
The preceding interview was recorded on August 29th, 2015 at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Denny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MinniePaulMusic.com. Music